Hello and welcome to the Catalyst podcast. My name is Ken Valady, partner and co-founder at Progressive, and this is a podcast series about the power of startup corporate partnerships and how, if carefully managed, they can become a true catalyst for change for the future. Every episode, I will interview either a startup founder or an industry leader who have experienced the benefits of these partnerships firsthand and are willing to discuss and share their key learnings and insights. This week, I'm really pleased to be speaking to Tom New, who is the co-founder and CPO at Fermissimo. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Ken. I'm really pleased to be here.
No problem at all. So to kick off, Tom, are you okay to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and Fermissimo?
Yeah, of course. Fermissimo is a company that is dedicated to making the world's online forms a bit better. So it stemmed from really some frustration that myself and my co-founder Al had. We've all had it, though. So filling out an online form and it taking too long, or not accepting a phone number that you've entered or a credit card number, or saying that your postcode isn't valid. I think we've all had experiences like that and eventually come to the point where we've decided not to complete that online form. We also realized at the time, Al was running a digital marketing agency, that on the client side, they would often come to the agency and ask questions around how do we improve our funnel? How do we acquire more users online? And they stumbled across the fact that the registration form that every single potential customer would eventually come across and have to complete had not been redesigned or optimized or improved in years. And they asked the question, how can we make this better? And the answer was kind of based around learnings and kind of looking up stuff online. But Al at the time realized that there was probably a better, more data-driven way to do this. And that's how the original Fermissimo platform came about. It's a software as a service. It's a clever bit of code that plugs into clients' websites and really sits at the point where a customer hands over personal information and turns from that semi-anonymous visitor into a customer for the very first time and just tracks their behavior. So it looks at what inputs, what boxes they're pressing on, keys that they're typing, and it takes a lot of data and does a lot of clever crunching in the background and relays that information back to our users in the form of a dashboard that highlights customer behavior online in online forms with a specific focus on showing pain points and frustration from a customer in trying to fill out that form. We launched probably about 18 months ago our updated replacement platform called Zuko. It's still on the same mission, though. We're still trying to help people understand where their forms are difficult or complicated to complete so that brands have the information and insight that they need to make changes and optimizations to their online form and make the entire user experience better as a result, and hopefully leading to higher conversions as well.
Excellent. And out of interest, Tom, what is the drop-off rate for forms generally?
That is a big, broad question, Ken. We're actually doing some work at the moment. We are doing some benchmarking. So we're looking at all of our data and we're giving tags to different forms. So based on their type, so it might be a registration form or an application form or a payment form, for example, and also applying the tags of industries. So financial services, travel, education, things like that. So we're going to be releasing some interesting data on this, but the annoying answer is it depends. It's a login form that simply has an email and a password field. The conversion rate is going to be much higher than, say, an application form for a mortgage, right? Which might be 15 steps and require a huge amount of information. So there's no set average conversion rate. When people kind of ask us the question of what should our conversion rate be, our kind of slightly glib answer is better than last month. That's what it should be. You should always be comparing yourself against yourself and always trying to improve and optimize the conversion rate of your online forms.
Got it. Fully understand that. So, Tom, focusing on the whole area of startups and corporates working together with this new offering, what brands have you worked with already?
Yeah, so some of our sort of best customers, the biggest brands that we work with are people like Capital One, who have been a customer for coming up to 4 years now. We've done some fantastic work and seen some great results with them. Other ones include people like Experian, Hiscox, Sainsbury's. In terms of industries, financial services is a big one for us, which when you think about it, kind of makes sense, right? They're big complicated forms, but for each additional customer, that represents a huge amount of value for the organizations trying to acquire those customers. But equally, we have brands in education, e-commerce, obviously, is a popular one as well, online gambling and betting, all industries that rely on people filling out forms to acquire customers. So car dealerships, maybe a bit less. A lot of that is done face-to-face. But any organization that relies on people filling out complicated forms online, we try and work with.
So Tom, you mentioned that you've been working for some time now with Capital One. Are your other partnerships as developed?
Yeah, so it really depends on the organization. Some companies speak to us and work with us for years at a time. Those tend to be the companies that have systems in place that allow them to do continuous testing, optimization, and website changes. Other companies can be big or small, tend to do sort of more projects of work. So obviously every organization has a shifting list of priorities. So we might have others, for example, a furniture retailer who instead of working with us constantly tends to do very focused bits of work. So they'll go away and do something else around their product lines or optimizing the product pages on their website. Then they'll say, look, now it's time for us to look at the checkout again, maybe for the next quarter, because we'd like to bump up our conversion rates. So they come and speak to us and say, look, we're thinking about redesigning this part of the checkout. We plug very easily into their website and give them some insight and recommendations based on what we see. They'll then roll that out and they'll say, great, we've managed to see some improvements there. And then their priorities will shift again. And they say, look, now for the next quarter, we want to focus on something else.
So Tom, don't take this question the wrong way, but I've been at a lot of demo days. I've seen a hell of a lot of startup pitches. And the question I have is, how do you compete against startups sometimes who some would say are pitching more sexy offerings and you're coming in with form analytics? How do you get your message across? How do you get your value across to a corporate?
First of all, I'm deeply offended, Ken. No, I'm obviously joking. I think we've done it in two ways. One is outlining the problem in a way that's relatable and perhaps taps into some emotions. So for us, that's getting everybody to think about when they've tried to fill out a form to book theatre tickets or book a table at a restaurant and the form is broken and they haven't been able to do that. We've all been through that. So that's the first way that we do it. The second is focusing on outcomes. Ultimately, if somebody uses our product, what does it lead to? And for us, that's more customers. And for those customers that they've acquired, they've had a better interaction and an experience with the brand. So doubling down on those two things has really kind of allowed us to cut through some of the more glossy, flashy offerings of other startups and basically said to brands, look, if you really care about results and pushing your brand forward, this is a product that's going to help you get there.
My next question, Tom, kind of standing back a bit, is looking at the whole corporate startup relationship and the relationships you've had and are having with many corporates. Two parts to the question. What best practice have you seen corporates adopt over time through working with you? And on the other side, what best practice have you found yourself adopting over time to improve the partnership with a corporate?
Yeah, really good questions. I think some of the best practices that I've seen are an understanding from large corporates that for a startup to work with them can be both intimidating, but also a little bit more complex than working with smaller brands. So what do I mean by that? Some of the best large organizations that we have worked with have acknowledged that often some of the due diligence and paperwork and security questions and things like that can be very burdensome for a startup to do. So what they've done is, ideally, they've kind of carved out a space where they can be lighter on some of those things. But if not, they're just very upfront about what needs to be done in order to become a supplier and been very upfront about that. So the startup can start working on that in the background whilst they're doing all the pitching and working out what the product or service might do for the brand. They can kind of work through all of that paperwork rather than being surprised about it at the end. The second thing that I think is fantastic is when a large corporation comes to the table with budget in mind. So that's obviously what you want to hear as a startup is not only that you can work with a brand, but they're actually going to pay for, even if it's just a proof of concept, that it's going to be a paid for one. That when large organizations are thinking about working with startups, they're not coming to the table basically with the idea of what can we get for free. They're saying we value the service and the outcomes it can produce. And we've also come to the table with a budget in mind. Now, of course, those two budgets might need to be moved and things like that. Of course, we understand that. But it's really fantastic when a corporation comes to the table with a bit of cash in hand. Also, because what that ensures is the organization is going to be bought into making it work as much as the startup. And that's really great to see.
And from a startup side, from your side, what best practice have you found yourself adopting?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think one of our investors gave us a good tip that's always stuck with us, and it's the hypothetical close. So it's basically asking the brand, let's say this meeting goes really well and you guys are keen to progress. What happens next? Okay, so I'm hearing that we would need to speak to this person or get sign off here. Let's say we do get sign off there. Would we be able to start then? And if the answer is no, you're gradually uncovering all the steps that you need to get through in order to kind of activate your product or get things started right at the beginning of the process. So as a startup, again, you're not surprised by delays and things like that. You've got a very clear idea of the steps and the people that you need to speak to in order to get to where you want to be. And that's been fantastically useful for us over the course of the years that we've been operating and working with brands.
Tom, next question I'd like to ask, and I ask all of my guests, is taking into account the experience you've had to date working with corporates, looking at the bigger picture, do you feel that more startups and corporates are now working together? Have these relationships improved, not only in terms of frequency, but quality, or do you feel the gap has got wider?
I think this is a very difficult question for me to answer broadly. I can say in my experience that I think perhaps we're past the era of tech tourism, where large corporations wanted to be seen to work with startups, but didn't necessarily know how that would work. And they would do a lot of browsing and a lot of conversations and meetings that wouldn't necessarily lead to more projects activated or actual bits of work or bits of software installed on the website, for example. I think we're past that. So I would say in terms of the quantity of conversations that we have with larger organizations has maybe increased a bit over the last couple of years, but certainly the quality has improved drastically. So when a large organization comes to speak to us, they've had a lot more experience now of what it means to work with a startup, the steps involved, and they're really good now at agreeing what success looks like and what the process looks like. So I would say the quality of the work and partnerships that we have has improved a lot over the last few years.
So Tom, final question for me, and it comes in two parts. The first part is, over the last few years, what is the key learning that you have taken from your experience of working with corporates? And secondly, for our corporate listeners, what would you say are the key benefits for a corporate when it comes to working with a startup?
Yeah, I think I almost have one answer that kind of captures both. And one of the key learnings for me working with corporates over the last few years has been keeping true to your vision as a co-founder or somebody running a startup. What is the problem that you're trying to solve in the marketplace and staying true to that? Because sometimes a trap that startups fall into is when they work with a large brand, they want to bend over backwards to keep the brand happy and give as much value to that organization as possible. But often that comes at a cost of continuing to develop a product that can potentially solve the problems of an entire market rather than just a single company. That is also something brands can benefit from hugely, because a successful tech company isn't just a solution for one organization. It solves the problems of lots and lots of organizations. And they do that by listening not just to one client, but to all of them and treading the path through those, working out what is best for everyone that we're speaking to, all of our customers. So the reason why this is so great for organizations is because the day that you buy a product, hopefully it's fantastic and adds a lot of value to you already. But then 6 months or 12 months down the line, that startup has developed features and functionality that they've put a lot of thought and gathered a lot of feedback around and solves problems that you may not have even known that you had. And products over time get better and better and better. So not only are organizations benefiting from the innovation at the start of the process, they're getting continuous value from a small, agile organization looking to solve big problems in the marketplace.
Got it. Thanks, Tom. I really feel that yourself and Famissimo are really great role models in how to approach, maintain and build long-term relationships with a corporate partner. So thank you for sharing your insights and learnings. Very much appreciated. Welcome to the part of the show where we look to answer a question from one of our listeners. This week, we have a question from John, who is head of brand for a large B2C company. And John's question is, when we speak to startups, they often talk about their roadmap of features and future product functionality. How much weight should we place on this when making a decision? And how can we manage expectations around product development internally? So, Tom, I'd like to hand that one over to you. I think it plays a bit into your last answer, but it'd be really good to get your view on that and to hopefully give John some insight.
It's a really interesting question, especially for me. So CPO, Chief Product Officer, I've loved looking after the product development of the organization. But equally, I've been in sales meetings a lot as a founder. And you're exactly right. Often what the product is today is discussed, but also where the product is going, future features and functionality are often discussed in those meetings. My advice to corporates would always be to buy the product as it is today and then be pleasantly surprised by what it becomes over the course of working with the startup. Because there's a bit of a trap there, I think, where you're talking about future features and functionality and placing a lot of weight on that. But as somebody that's built a startup, I know that our roadmap changes constantly based on the ongoing conversations that we have with customers and what's happening out there in the marketplace. So it's very, very changeable. And we would hate to let down a brand by changing our roadmap and them having a big kind of vested stake in something that we said we were going to build in the future. Having said that, they can be pleasantly surprised by all the stuff that we develop over time, because we're talking to all of our customers all the time and trying to build the best product we possibly can. But I would always say buy the product as it is today and be surprised and delighted by all of the stuff that comes after that.
Thanks, Tom. Great answer. And hopefully, John, that's helped you in terms of how you manage expectations internally within your company. If you have a question that you would like to ask, please email me at ken@thisisprogressive.com. And each episode, we will look to pick 1 to 2 questions to discuss live with our chosen guest. Thank you very much again for your time today, Tom. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks so much for having me, Ken. It's always great to chat. I always think of ourselves as kind of on the same path. We started out around the same time. It's been great to know you since the beginning of our startup. So thanks very much for having me.
Thanks, Tom. And I know we're going to continue to stay in touch whatever comes next. If you want to contact Tom, full details can be found in the notes of this podcast. That's it for this episode. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to this series and please rate us and leave a review on your chosen podcast platform. All contributions are very much appreciated. Thank you.